Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I want to mention a couple of free things that you can go to over the next couple of days. We had Samuel Friedman on earlier, who wrote Letters to a Young Journalist. He's going to be doing a reading at 6 p.m. Thursday at the Columbia University Bookstore, 115th Street and Broadway. And also, I mentioned last hour that I'll be moderating a panel for the Tribeca Film Festival tomorrow afternoon as part of their series Visions of History and Truth, Artists in Action After 9/11. And I had been told that they're charging $20 for that, but it turns out that it's free. So forgive the less than optimal flow of information, but if you're interested in that, that's the panel where we will be talking about the film that opened the festival tonight, United 93, the real-time depiction of the 9/11 hijacking and passenger heroism and ultimate crashing of that plane in Pennsylvania, the movie for which the trailer wound up being pulled at an Upper West Side theater after it was too intense for some in the audience. We'll have the producer of United 93, Lloyd Levin, on the panel, David Allen Bache, one of the actors, and Anne Hogue, curator of the September 11th documentary project at the Library of Congress, and looking broadly at the role of the arts in tragedy, and certainly in particular at the movie United 93 that's opening the Tribeca Film Festival tonight. So again, this is free tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center that is at 119 Tribeca Performing Arts is, 199 Chamber Street between Greenwich and West Street for that panel tomorrow afternoon, okay? Now, the Grand Rebbe of the Satmar sect of Hasidic Jews died last night at the age of 91. Rabbi Moses Teitelbaum was spiritual leader of the group, which is estimated to have about 120,000 members worldwide, most of them now living in Williamsburg in Brooklyn and the town of Kiryas Joel in Orange County, about 45 miles northwest of the city. Rabbi Teitelbaum died at Mount Sinai Hospital here in Manhattan and was buried this morning. With us now to talk about the place of the Grand Rebbe in Satmar life and the place of Satmars in Jewish life is David Pollack, Associate Executive Director of the Jewish Relations Council, Community Relations Council of New York. Originally from Romania, by the way, many Satmars came to America after the Holocaust, led by the previous Grand Rebbe, Joel Teitelbaum, uncle of the Rebbe who just died. And as you may know, the Satmar's interpretation of the Bible has led them not to believe that there should be a state of Israel at this time, and there is a dispute over who will succeed Rabbi Teitelbaum as Grand Rebbe, a dispute that is even wound up in Brooklyn courtroom. So we'll talk about this and more with David Pollack. Mr. Pollack, welcome to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's do some Satmar 101, because all most people probably know is there's this group of Orthodox Jews they see on the street in which women cover their heads and men wear long black coats and long beards. How old a group is this, and where does the name Satmar come from?
You have a lot of questions to be answered there. The group originally comes from northern Transylvania, which is now in Romania, and there was both a region and a town called Satmar. Rabbi Joel Teitelbaum, who was the first Satmar Rebbe, came to the United States in 1946, and he came to do some fundraising for an orphanage that he had established in Israel for survivors of the Holocaust, children who survived the Holocaust. And some of his original congregants from the town of Satmar and the region were here in New York, and they begged him to stay. And he established a congregation in Williamsburg, and by the time that he died in 1979, there were 50,000 people, and today it's continued to grow, and there are about 100,000.
How do the Satmars differ in their beliefs or lifestyles or anything else you think is important to mention from other Orthodox or Hasidic Jews who may appear to outsiders to dress similarly, the Lubavitchers, for example?
First of all, there are regional differences among many Hasidim. Lubavitchers are from Belarus in the former Soviet Union. Satmar are from Hungary, and you mentioned the issue of the State of Israel. The Lubavitch will vote in Israeli elections. Satmar will not, for theological reasons. The Hasidim often look alike, but the different sects of Hasidim all follow a particular rabbinic dynasty. The Satmar dynasty was Teitelbaums. The Lubavitch dynasty were mainly Schneersons, and they have a particular affiliation with their rebbe, and often the leadership of the Hasidic group goes when a particular rebbe dies, it goes to one of his children or another relative.
And we'll talk about the controversial issue of succession in this case as we go. But on the question of being non-Zionist Jews, it's because the Bible says that the Messiah will come someday and lead Jews back to the land of Israel. And so it's just a simple belief by the Satmars that since the Messiah hasn't come, the time is not right for a political state of Israel?
That's the short answer.
Is there
First of all, Rabbi Joel was one of the most articulate anti-Zionist spokespeople, and I don't intend to be an apologist for him, but he was concerned about not only that the State of Israel existed, but, for example, that Israel was a democracy. And to participate in such a government would mean that any Orthodox member of the government would have to inevitably compromise his Torah values, his Orthodox values. He was the Zionists were secular in his mind. There were other theological issues.
But
at the same time, mm-hmm. he loved the State of Israel, and he loved the people of Israel, and he had many followers there, too. And, even this Rebbe in 1994 visited Israel, and he was met at the gates of Jerusalem by 100,000 people.
David Pollack, my guest on WNYC, Associate Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York, as we talk about the Satmar Hasidic Jews on the day after their Grand Rebbe died at the age of 91, Moses Teitelbaum. And also joining us now is Rabbi Yisrael Singer, Chairman of the Policy Council of the World Jewish Congress. He knew Rabbi Teitelbaum. And Rabbi Singer, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Great
Good
pleasure.
Morning.
Thank you very much.
Who was Rabbi Teitelbaum for the uninitiated? What was his place in Satmar life?
Well, he was the supreme leader of a very, very important group of Jews of Hasidic origin. You correctly described them, Mr. Pollack, and you described very, very carefully what their views were by responding to the questions with regard to Israel and with regard to their attitudes on many, many questions. But I think one of the most important questions is their religious orientation. And I think it's here that they differ from other Hasidic groups and from other groups. Their otherworldliness and their separation from the modern world, I think, despite the fact that they have to earn a living and live in the real world and live in urban centers, as well as living in a suburban setting in Kiryas Joel, is that they separate themselves out from the rest of the world socially, culturally, intellectually, and sometimes even linguistically. Certainly, with regard to the cuisine they eat only strictly kosher that they produce themselves. And they have very, very careful habits with regard to whom they marry, with whom they talk to, with regard to how they comport themselves and whom they live with and interact socially. And I think that's what differs in their lifestyle most, and that's what you notice. Their clothing is only an exterior description of what their interior philosophical orientation is, and that is to be separate.
What would they say, or what would you say to listeners who might be thinking, well, gosh, that's just so closed off. It's, you know, that it's extreme.
It's like, for instance, if you look at communities of people who are closed off for religious purposes in various churches because they believe that the world is filled with very, very many spiritual and carnal dangers, and they want to live, although they want to live a constructive life and they want to live an economically constructive life, they earn livings and they produce many, many products that people use. They are selling many, many different kinds of artifacts that they make, religious artifacts and others. They're actually very, very talented people, very creative people, but they don't want to socially interact with people who are going to endanger their lifestyle. They believe that they should live a certain way, and that way is one which doesn't include intermingling their social and cultural and intellectual lives with others.
And, you know, in 1946, when Rabbi Joel came to America, he almost immediately started talking about the need to set up his own shtetl, because a shtetl is a little village in Europe. And what he wanted to do was to recreate the insularity of the village.
And so is that what Curious Joel, the town in Orange County, is that what that's intended to be?
That's exactly what he intended to do all the time.
That's correct.
Now, I gather that there is some major conflict between two of his sons, Aaron and Zalman Teitelbaum, over who will succeed him as Grand Rebbe. Rabbi Singer, who decides?
I think it's an internal question. They will decide for themselves. That's what everybody has said, and that's the way it should be. I think that's an internal question. It's not one for us, certainly. We have no role in that issue. Those who believe in these values that these people have arranged for themselves, and we, as practicing Jews, believe in many of them, but we don't follow their dicta in all of these things. So their leader will be the person whom they choose to lead them.
But this actually wound up in a court in Brooklyn a couple of years ago, based on what you were telling
us. Those were technical issues that the court was asked to deal with, and the court itself decided that it was an internal issue, and that's exactly
what the court decided was, number one, that the Satmar bylaws establish that the Grand Rabbi is the final arbiter in all things of all things Satmar, and there were technical decisions that came from that. But you know, many view these court battles as a surrogate battle for succession, and you know, I would anticipate that the court battles will continue.
It's funny, though, isn't it, for this group to look to the secular state to resolve some of their structural things?
I'm not sure all do. I think many would probably frown on that, and I think that the best way to do it is to leave them to their own devices to resolve their issues, and they have many, many devices, both rabbinic and rabbinic courts, as well as various forms of arbitration, which I think will probably be the way it will be resolved, hopefully.
Rabbi, let me ask you kind of a religious question. The Satmars are believers in Jewish mysticism, or practitioners of what is sometimes called Jewish mysticism. Does that mean they focus much in their spiritual practice on trying to achieve experiences of the divine in daily life?
Well, all Jews do. They just do it more actively and more aggressively, and I think they also have a greater amount of activities which they fill their lives with as compared to Jews who are more secular and more culturally integrated into Western civilization. So it's assumed that the people who have most of their lives devoted to and involved in Jewish practices, some of which have mystical orientations, they will achieve the greater achievements with regard to mystical, I think, solutions to some of the problems that they gravitate towards. But I don't think that they're all filled with mysticism. They're filled with daily practices of Judaism when they devote themselves to Judaism on a full-time basis. Everything they do is about Judaism.
One issue that does play out, though, is, and it does for any Hasidic group, is that a Hasid believes that his Rebbe or her Rebbe is someone who can intervene on their behalf in front of the Almighty. And Hasidim come to their Rebbe for prayers on behalf of the sick. They come for a blessing, because many Hasidic groups have arranged marriages, so they want the Rebbe's approval that the marriage will be okay. They come to Rebbe's with business questions, and they believe, it's part of their mystical belief, that the Rebbe has special insight that will help guide their lives. And one of the things that every Satmar Chassid believes even today is that Rabbi Moshe will continue to intervene on their behalf in heaven.
Absolutely, and that has been the tradition with regard to Jewish holy men, whether they were Hasidic or whether they were Kabbalistic or whether they were men who intervened for people throughout the Jewish people's history. It's an old tradition, and the Hasidic movement renewed that in around 1720, 1731, when they started.
1736 is what they
were. Well, that was, yeah, that, the dates are vague, and I agree with you that that was around the period. It was a period in which they renewed that tradition, which had very.
And I'm sorry to say that that's where we have to leave it, because we're out of time, but I think a lot of our listeners now know a lot more about the Satmar to have some context when they see the images of the funeral on television. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Rabbi Yisrael Singer and David Pollack from the Jewish Community Relations Council.